few moments. He was named for the noted naturalist and ornithologist Charles Barney Corey, who made seasonal collecting trips to South Florida in the late 19th century. As a boy, Corey lived in a maritime-oriented world in which the simple dugout canoe played a major role. Early this century, however, the drainage of the southeastern Everglades brought drastic changes to the environment, which altered the lifestyle of the Indians residing in the Miami and Fort Lauderdale areas. Canoe travel became severely curtailed, and by 1915, the last major frontier trading post where the Indians brought their furs and hides closed in Miami, as the Indians could not depend on their canoes to get their goods to market. By 1917, Seminoles in the Fort Lauderdale area began to pick crops for a living, working for white farmers who had moved onto the newly drained Everglades lands and the accessible Hammock Islands. Often these islands, such as Pine Island, had been the Seminoles' former home sites and farms. The Indians were forced off as the real estate was sold. It was into this situation that Corey Osceola grew into manhood. While a young man, he was involved in an accident which claimed one of his arms. This handicap did not discourage him from becoming a strong figure of leadership in the coming years, which proved to be transitional ones for the Seminole. Tourist attractions, which featured Seminole Indians as the key features, became a new economy and lifestyle for many Seminoles. Miami was a center for employment, and Corey moved there. His command of English and his capabilities of dealing with Indians and whites alike soon placed him in a key position at the large attraction of Musa Isle. There he managed the Seminole Village and the gift shop concession, assuming a greater business responsibility than any other Seminole man in the mid-1920s. Meanwhile, Juanita Cypress came to Musa Isle with her parents, Ruby and Futch Cypress, from their camp in Collier County. She met Corey and they were married at the attraction. Corey's position at Musa Isle placed him in a unique situation. As the non-reservation Seminoles traditionally had no leader, there was no one person to represent them in their increasing confrontations with the U.S. government, state, and local authorities. Corey became the very visible, figurative representative of the Miccosukee-speaking Seminoles, who wanted nothing to do with the government or reservation. These people had no one to define, much less protect their rights. Corey became their champion. He was in a singular political position. At the Musa Isle location, he was able to keep abreast of matters which might affect the Florida Indians. His friendliness and visibility attracted the media, who sought him out for interviews. Because of his intense involvement, the media regarded him as the leader of the Seminoles, calling him chief. Corey was diligent in his efforts to uphold the Seminoles' unconquered status and their rights to the land. Once in 1930, he sent a reprimanding telegram to President Herbert Hoover, who had appointed an Oklahoma Seminole chief to sign papers for a land transfer. Whether it was for lands in Oklahoma or Florida, it was not clear, so Corey stated the position of the Florida Seminoles, and I quote, "We are satisfied with our homes in the Everglades. Our forefathers held this land against the white man, and we have lived on it ever since. We do not agree to anything but to be let alone in possession of the land from which the white man failed to drive us," end quote. In another instance, Corey contacted the Secretary of the Interior when there was an outbreak of deer tick fever in Florida's cattle herds. The ranchers, who had political clout, wanted to have the epidemic stopped, even if it meant the eradication of all the suspected carriers, the Florida deer. That would have depleted the Seminoles' food supply. Corey's plea to the secretary and subsequent investigations disproved the assumption that the deer were responsible for the spread of the disease. There were strong politics involved in this incident. Had Corey not directly contacted the secretary, the deer would have been slaughtered, leaving the Seminoles impoverished. Further, in order to demonstrate the Seminoles' rights of citizenship, which all American Indians had been granted by law in 1924, Corey mustered 15 Seminole men to register to vote in a Miami election in 1930. The local voting authorities were not even aware that the Indians were eligible. In the latter 1930s, the Osceola family moved to Collier County, where the elder Seminoles remained until their deaths. Corey continued to be involved as the head of the independent or traditionalist Seminoles, those who would not accept governmental supervision. He was a medicine man whose concern for his people's welfare went as deep as his own pocket. Many Indians refused a governmental handout but would accept money from Corey Osceola. While Corey was involved in his work, Juanita was busy raising a family of 7 children. She was also an accomplished craftswoman. Her patchwork clothing can be found in a number of museums. Corey was a remarkable person in a remarkable position. His concern and involvement literally shaped Seminole rights in Florida. We may well wonder what Indian rights taken for granted today might have been denied or passed over for lack of precedence had it not been for the conscientiousness of Corey Osceola in these formative years of Florida Indian political structure. Now I have a special favor. I have been working in Broward County to preserve Pine Island, which is a large island that was in the Everglades, is now drained near a large subdivision in western Broward County. This happens to be the birthplace of Corey Osceola, where he was born in 1893. And the island itself is very unique and was a Seminole site up to 1900. It is a major Seminole site in the state in terms of acreage and in terms of importance. And it is going to, we are asking the state for CARL funding, that's Conservation and Recreational Lands funding, to purchase Pine Island so that the county may have it preserved. I have some forms back at the archive booth over in this direction. If any of you feel compelled to sign a form simply stating, we support the acquisition of the historically and economically sensitive Seminole Indian site of Pine Island in Broward County. This site is most significant to Florida's Indians. The Land Selection Committee's continued support of this important project would be greatly appreciated. Please enter our names into the minutes of the committee's next meeting, showing our support of the Pine Island project. We would really appreciate your help on this. This will be the first Seminole Indian site that would receive preservation funds. Thank you.
Spoke to a man, and I guess Corey was one of them. He told him, no, we don't want nothing to do with a white man. I don't blame him. There was still the pain and the scar was still there. So many of these people said, we do not want to even meet with the U.S. government. So another man by the name of Frank Billy, over in the Big Cypress area, he did live here also, agreed to listen. And when he did, they told him that they will give him education monies, welfare monies, education welfare, and health. And at that time, maybe some of the things that Patsy was talking about in the area of different type of illnesses persuaded them. Thank goodness, I thought they would come and picking me up or something. It scared me. But anyway, a lot of illness was taking place. So Frank Billy lives out in a Big Cypress Reservation now. He went to the different locations in Florida. One of them was over in Indian River area, Okeechobee, here on the trail, and in Hollywood, and Fort Pierce and Fort Myers. And he told them what the government's intention was. And that here's a chance where I know it's been almost 100 years, but maybe we can get some good out of the white man now in the United States government. We never signed a peace treaty, but maybe we can get some assistance. The modern day is coming around where we cannot live off the land anymore. We must learn how to read and write and get into the mainstream. At the same time, try to maintain our identity. So somehow he prevailed. And in 1957, April, there was a group of people called Seminole Tribe of Florida, became organized, and some of us joined it. I joined it because I was just a little kid, didn't know the difference in them. And today, the Seminole Tribe, when it was organized, they set up an election system. You was not appointed. The election system is like where you are campaigned just like any other candidate that you have, the President of the United States or your governors. How do we position our chairmen, our chiefs in the United States? We think we're above the governor. We think we're equal to the United States president. And so when we sit beside, when if the United States have a meeting, we sit probably at the same level as the President of the United States. This thing that took place in 1957, I think First World War, Second World War came by, and Japan, I think, was demolished. Hiroshima, I think they dropped the bomb, tore that up a little bit. Asian countries, Wake Islands, these areas. These people, Frank Billy said that when he was sitting at the table to ask the government to be recognized, to receive monies from the government, he saw Japan sitting over there. He saw people on the islands like Philippines sitting over there. He even saw people from Germany sitting over there asking for redevelopment. And one of those people that was asking for redevelopment was a Seminole Indian representative by Frank Billy. And that's how we got established amongst those people at that time. Today, we are 1,700 in number. Back when Frank Billy was trying to organize it in 1957, I'm just talking about yesterday, it was only about 800. Today, our population is up to about 1,700, and we are working hard every day to populate. Health was poor. It may be still a little bit in those conditions, but we're much better off in health. Most people speak English. Some of us speak Spanish. The first language, a foreign language that the Seminole Indians and the people of this country learned were Spanish. That, therefore, our language has a mixture of Spanish, has a mixture of French, and who's another foreign territory that came here. So if you ever hear us speaking somewhere, and if I said something like, kawaiite in his English, I'll say, now if I change one word a little bit, I said, kabayokate in his English means like a horse. So we say horse, caballo, we say kawaii. I've heard us say kotashi in our language. It's a Spanish, mispronounced Spanish word saying cuchara, I think, for spoon. So there's a lot of part of our language that's Spanish. British, I'm not quite sure. The French, which one it is, except I hear people saying ifi once in a while, and I hear the French saying ifi once in a while about dogs. How it got started, I don't know. Cows, we say wagi. And not too long ago, I went down into Texas, down the tip of it on the south, and there was Port Lavaca. And I kept wondering, what is that word? Sounds familiar. Wagi means cow in my language, and vaca is cow in the Spanish language. So we went to the port of cows down in southern Texas. So you can say much of our language is mixed with it. Sometimes we say, chanuchipame means I am sleepy. It's also a derivative of the word noches, buenas noches, or whatever it is. Noche means, so when I'm saying it, I say, I'm going to go to sleep. If I said this, I'm going night-night. I'm going to sleep. Now, what the other language could have been, I'm not sure, but there is two languages here in Florida, or two tribes, that has consumed the other tribes, and we're known as Seminoles and Miccosukees. The two tribes that are here today could be the Creeks and the Miccosukees. Sometimes they say Spanish, the word Seminole is a mispronounced Spanish word, and the word that is mispronounced is Cimarron. Cimarron means free. Who was free? Who were they applying this word free people to? It was the slaves that they brought over from Africa, the Ashantes. The Ashantes were brought somewhere around last part of 1598 or 1600s, and first part of 1600s. When they finally joined forces with the Indians one time or another, when he ran away, the Spanish people would call him Cimarrones. In our language, we have no R sound. That R sound has an L sound. Therefore, somebody in our tribe, his name is Robert, you see the name Lobert or Lobby. Name is Ruby, you go Luby. In the word Cimarron, the R sound is replaced with an L sound. We start saying Seminole. And pretty soon, we became Seminole Indians. We were not subject to slavery. Maybe we were at one time or another. I've seen where Andrew Jackson came down and created some fake wars to say he had a war to take over land. I think in 1750 is the first time that these words became printed on paper, saying Seminole, and about the central Florida below Tallahassee was a big settlement of a lot of runaway blacks during that time, and they would call them Seminoles and Indians. Pretty soon, the word "and" disappeared, and they started saying Seminole Indians, and we've just kept it up. If the United States government was confused at it, it was better to just leave them alone. So in 1957, we became organized as Seminole Tribe of Florida. The Miccosukee Indians did not want to join with the name Seminole because they said we are Miccosukee, not Seminole. So in 1962, they became organized, known as the Miccosukee Tribe of Florida. Now, in the organization, is it fantastic? I would say yes because I grew up in it. Some other people says no. They say that anybody under the government who bent to the government is a defeated group of people. So anybody who lives on the reservation is a defeated. These people had surrendered is a term. So some of us will say we did not surrender. But in 1957, the term working with the government was a sign of surrender. Cory Osceola was one of the people that did not want to live on these reservations. He lived on the Tamiami Trail, and his home is pretty close by here, very historical part. And I think many of us over in the Seminole Tribe of Florida, what the one that belongs to the government, I don't know what the proper term is, but we think maybe envy or respected his position. They said, my goodness, I wish I'd known why he was that way. There's, I think, about 200 people today that do not belong either Seminole or Miccosukees, and they still hold on to the traditional customs, even though they're living in modern times and keeping on the faith that was passed on to them by their leaders years ago. So Seminole Tribe of Florida, we're moving along. There's a lot of things that happens in Seminoles. There was treaties that was signed and broken, and then agreements that were signed. So I happen to be one of the first ones that ever come along to put the government to the test on some of those agreements. It could be animals, it could be land, it could be just about anything. And pretty soon, you start challenging. One thing you see, you start running into lawsuits. So there I is, go to courts most of the time. The latest incident that became notorious, and there is something in Florida called Florida Panther. Now, I did not know it was known as a Felix Concolor Corii, whom Cory Osceola, you know, that gentleman by the name of Cory, whoever that man was years ago, named. I think he killed about 15 of them. Then they hired another person in 1940s to kill some panthers to check or to eliminate the Florida panther in 1940 because it was eating the cattle in this country here. So there was a man where I seen where he boasted about he's killing over 40 and 50. And if we had eliminated at that time, fine. But in our customs or in our culture, we can, on the reservation, government said we can kill anything we want for pleasure, for eating, for our benefit. And if it was just to slaughter it, it was all right. So no one, and then the government said that if we're going to change that law on you, we will write you a letter informing you of this situation of change, and we will sit down and see if we can negotiate the terms, if you will go with us or go against us. That letter was never sent. So the thing to do was to challenge, and just happened to be the one to challenge it, and we tested it. And somebody says, congratulations, James, you went to court and you won. No, we didn't. The United States is a ruthless government. That's why we're known as United States of America. If we were not ruthless, we would not have a free country to live and enjoy. So I won in one battle. That doesn't mean a darn thing. They'll probably catch James Billy someplace else on his own private territory, not as a leader of the tribe. So if you have seen that, we do respect the government's wishes on it. And there is panthers out there. We hope he lives out there for a long time. We are divided into clans. Clan system is not the one that those people that's wearing hoods now and white sheets. This clan system that we have is to divide us, and so we'll know who we are and that we do not intermarry into the same family tree. We have 8 clans. Panther Clan is the supreme clan. This is the clan that the Creator chose to keep the law and the medicine. And this particular clan is the one that's supposed to hold all these. So we have the Panther Clan, we have the Bird Clan, we have the Wind Clan, we have the Otter Clan, Snake Clan, Bear Clan, Frog Clan, and I'm missing one, Deer or Bear, I don't know which one I didn't say. The clan system divides us where, like, if all you females are sitting here right now, and I come up to you and I say, what is your clan? And you would say, I'm in the Bird Clan. Whether I know you or not, have never met you before, that tells me immediately, I'll get out of here. That tells me immediately that you are in my clan and that you are my relative. I don't care how far down. But if you come up to me and you say that you're in the Panther Clan, then if you're a female, then eligible game. So this way, we do not marry into our own cousins. And someone figured out years ago, even in your own system, if you had forgotten it, They tell you never marry too close into your own family tree. You wind up with mongoloids. You wind up with some sort of incestation with retardation. I don't know what it would be. It just doesn't mix good. So this is the way it was set. So you, in our clan system, we can. If I'm in the bird clan, I cannot marry anybody in my own clan. No boyfriend, girlfriend stuff. No hanking around. But if I'm in my bird clan and there's another clan, they're eligible. So that's the way we divide ourselves today. OB, we're standing back there bragging about his clan, and he's in the Panther clan. There's quite a few Panther clans. I think the Panther clan and the Bird clan is one of the largest clan systems today. I would like to bring on, I was talking about other tribes. Some other group of people that was down here that the Seminoles and the Miccosukees did not consume, and they still stay under their identity, and they're all ugly. There is a tribe, but they're very ugly people. You can see him just a minute. I can show you how ugly he is. No, just kidding. These are the Choctaws. Henry Batiste Jr. is, I'm saying that because I'm just a little bit taller than him and I can outrun him. But anyway, in our tribe, the Choctaws used to range down in these territories too. They did not stay in one particular corner block of 63rd Avenue and Tree Street. The Indians traveled all over the country. And I used to hear that, oh, the Choctaws, oh, they were mean people. And I used to wonder what they were talking about, Choctaws. Then later on in life, I started to find out they were talking about the Choctaws. There's another group of people they used to call Talagas. Get one of Talagas. Who the heck is that? Those are the Cherokees. And sometimes you'll run into a family in our tribe, and she will say, I am Cherokee or I am Choctaw. Those are part of my families, but we have... we got stuck down here and we became part of the two organizations or the two tribes that is known today down here. So this is why when somebody says a pure tribe, sometimes we're not. Sometimes it'd be another Indian tribe. We are Indians, but it'd be another Indian tribe mixed with us. I would like to introduce Henry Batiste. Is that the Battius or is it Batiste?
It's Batiste.
Batiste. When you read the name, it says Battius. That's the way I looked at him. B-A-T-T-I-E-S-T, Battius, Battus. No, Batiste, okay. I first met Junior when he was about that tall. He was about 4 or 5 years old. And it was a couple of years, several years